This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. The land on which I am lucky enough to raise my son always was and always will be Aboriginal land. This episode is brought to you by Mrs. Kevin's Photos, led by a mother and Melbourne-based fine art film photographer. Creating special photos to keep forever as your visual inheritance, Mrs. Kevin's Photos captures moments through 35mm film, digital and Super 8 video footage, so that you can look back and remember how it all felt. To celebrate this partnership, we'll be announcing a giveaway for our Melbourne-based listeners over on our Instagram, readyornot.pod. Or you can head to mrskevinsphotos.com to book in an emotive, timeless and intimate photography session.
I was essentially brought up in an environment where you work your ass off, you go for the stable job, the stable income, financial security is everything, don't stuff it up. I started shifting that identity that I've been clinging on to. Holy hell, this is not what I thought it would be. I've always been the type of person, you just kick on, don't complain, don't talk about your feelings, mate. No one can, just kick on. I'm just holding my shit together now and I'll just have to figure it out when the baby comes. And the fact that they knew that when they were going to come home, they were going to come home typically to a tired, resentful partner.
Leonie Akidinor is a property developer, relationship coach, and the host of Parenthood, a podcast that explores the parenting experience from all angles. She's also a mother who has faced both pre- and postnatal depression, as well as the profound identity shifts and emotional struggles that can come with motherhood. Posey, will you quiet down while I do this, please? Through her podcast, Leonie explores the greatest challenges parents are facing today, with a focus on hearing from both sides of a relationship. Here, Leonie talks about acknowledging the need to rest after a lifetime of assigning her value to productivity, what she's learned about parenting and relationships from interviewing both mums and dads, and her greatest advice for new mums navigating career and motherhood. And just a note, as you'll probably realise, this was recorded while I was pregnant, and I forgot just how good this chat was. And I hope you'd prefer that I just record with Posey's little noise in the background, because I don't want to lie about how I'm making work work, when that's the whole point of the podcast. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the brilliant and bright Leonie Akidinor. Leonie, it was the identity crisis that you experienced when becoming a parent that led you to making your podcast Parenthood. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's amazing when you become a parent, and even the pregnancy phase, everything can kind of get spun on its head a little bit. And I feel like a lot of the childhood Are we allowed to swear? I'm already saying shit and I didn't even ask.
I do nastier words than that, don't worry.
All your childhood shit just sort of comes up, and all those insecurities and all the great stuff. So for me, just dialing back one, you know, before having children, whilst being pregnant, I really suffered. I had prenatal depression. My entire life, though, I've always had anxiety sort of, you know, bubbling away across the surface. So I guess pregnancy spiked that. So I didn't have a very good pregnancy from a mental health perspective. Then I had my first little one and I was like, wow, I didn't know that this is what it would be like. I don't know if you can relate, but you know, but you just, this isn't what I saw on Instagram.
It's funny you say that. I actually went for a walk this morning and I was thinking about, like, there's so many great parts of it, don't get me wrong, but I was thinking about how I just thought MATLAB was the good life and then that was it. And I was literally reflecting on it. Lucy just thought she was just gonna like live the good life. Yeah. And there's a lot of good parts, but it's not a holiday.
You don't see the sleep deprivation in the parents' eyes as they're pushing the child on the swing, or you don't see these things that are like so silent when you're not in it, right? So exactly, to your point, there's so much good, but also there was a lot of challenge for me. So essentially, I got postnatal depression, had high anxiety, etc., when my little one was born. And at that point, I started, I think when you're at the depths of a mental health sort of crisis, it makes you reevaluate life in general. And I remember sitting there going, what is the point of all of this? I mean, I've worked my ass off. You know, I went to the uni, I got the job, I did all the things and I ticked all the boxes. And yeah, I've got a, I guess, a secure income stream in my day job as a property developer. But hey, I always wanted to be like an actress when I was little, and I loved drama, and I loved, you know, what happened to that creative side of me? And it very much got beaten out of me, because I think there were so many expectations, particularly from my parents, who are essentially migrants to this country. My mum was born here, but then went back to Greece at the age of 5. My dad's Nigerian and came as an adult to this country with my mother, who was an adult at the time too. So, you know, I was essentially brought up in an environment where you work your ass off, you go for the stable job, the stable income, financial security is everything. Don't stuff it up, right? So I was like, okay.
Pressure.
Like acting, it's a bit more risk, you know, risky than normal day job, I guess. You know, I say that in talking marks. So I never let myself go down that path. So the identity crisis for me was really like a culmination of all of these reflections upon where I'd gotten to date, and then almost feeling a little torn by the fact that I didn't feel I was really chasing my passion. I didn't feel really lit up by anything, really. And I thought, okay, well, where to from here? And so I think first and foremost, I thought to myself, I'm in the depth of, you know, what felt like hell. I was just angry, frustrated, sleep deprived. And I was like, does anyone else feel this way once they've had a child? And if they do, like, where are you? Talk to me.
So why are they talking about
alone? Yes. And there were so many beautiful podcasts that I came across along the way, but I felt as though I really wanted to hear more stories than anything else. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to create my own thing. And this was after baby number 2, actually. And my little one was 6 weeks old. And I just went, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. So I'm sitting
No time like the present.
No time like the present. 3 a.m., you know, breastfeeding and like smashing away on my notes on my phone, being like, oh, I could, you know, I could call my podcast this, or I could have this sort of, you know, strategic idea around it, you know. And that's me, though. I'm always 1,000 miles an hour. So, and then that led to some really great conversations. And it was lockdown here in Melbourne too. So I felt as though the podcast really healed me to some extent, and also gave me an opportunity to network in a really kind of tough time where we're all sort of locked up and indoors for quite some time. And yeah, essentially I started shifting that identity that I had been clinging on to for, you know, 30 years prior.
Wow, that makes me feel better, because I'm going to be having a baby soon. And this time I'll be navigating sort of work and postpartum in a bit more of a all over the shop way. I'm not just going to be taking mat leave and then going back to my job. It'll look different. So that makes me feel better that you were thinking about things at 3 a.m. Hopefully I will be too. So let's take it back to the start now. What did career life look like for you before babies?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, it was very much very single focused in, okay, let's do things smart. So I enjoyed business in general. So I became a management consultant, because that gives you enough variety, you know, to work with different clients, different businesses, and essentially improve the way in which they operate. So I was in that big corporate machine. I worked with Ernst & Young for a number of years, and yeah, and sort of got into that, and I loved it. And there was so many aspects of it, particularly interacting with other people and solving problems and hearing their stories, which I absolutely loved. But I guess, yeah, there was an element, I feel, of creativity that perhaps I wanted more of.
And so where to from there? The property development then came part of your job. Did that come before kids too?
Yeah. So I guess essentially, initially it was management consulting for all these different organizations, as in clients. I had clients across different industries. I landed in a property company. Oh, it's actually the government arm of property in Sydney. I was living there for a period of time, and from Melbourne originally. So, and I was seconded. I guess that means I was, you know, working for them full time in a consulting capacity. So I was essentially like the 2IC to the COO, and she was this amazing powerhouse woman, and, you know, had children herself, and really made me realize that, like, you can be the powerhouse corporate machine And, you know, obviously there's give and take with how much she could be around for her children, but like what a great person to look up to, particularly in a property industry, which is so male heavy, to see her and work alongside her was an absolute honor. So I actually grew up in a property family. My parents started a property development business when I was young, and I always thought I'd never get into property because that seemed pretty boring to me. So then I land this job in my 20s in property and realized that I was like, oh, it's actually pretty cool. Like there's elements of this that I never appreciated before. So then I come back to Melbourne, I start working for my family's property development business. I have my identity crisis once I had children, and then started the podcast. The podcast then led to other opportunities. Like now I do a little bit of modeling, a little bit of TV work. So I'm able to finally explore those avenues that I think as a child, I always wanted to explore.
Oh, I love when motherhood brings creativity. So that's such a nice trajectory. So you mentioned this boss mentor that was a mother and was doing a lot at work, kicking a lot of goals at work. Were you one of those people that was thinking quite early about how you'd make work work alongside being a mother?
I feel as though I was probably the opposite. I was like, when that time comes, I will work it out. And I didn't realize how much work there is to be a parent, full stop. Like I just kind of was like, oh yeah, like you send your kids off
to
school.
They do it, I'll do it.
Yeah, like chill, no dramas. Like I didn't realize there were things like the mental load and the mum guilt and all of these other factors. So I know I didn't even really let myself think about it until I was in it. And then I went, holy hell, this is not what I thought it would be.
I think it's probably better than what I was like, which was one of those people that was like worrying their whole 20s about how they'd make it work, which is sort of useless because you have to figure it out anyway. So I think going in a little bit blind is probably a good thing. So then you do, well, I might be putting words into your mouth, we'll find out. You do decide to start trying to conceive. Was that an easy decision or did you sit on that for a while or where were you at in your headspace then?
Yeah, so I was in a relationship with I ended up coming back to Melbourne after living in Sydney and living away for a little while and ended up with my very first boyfriend. So I was actually together with him between the age of 20 and 24. Then we broke up and then we got back together when I was 30. So that was pretty cool. And things moved quite quickly for us, obviously, because we had the history together. We'd sort of spoken about, because I'm so type A, and I know that when I want something to happen, it's like, let's spreadsheet it, let's document this shit, let's get it done. And I knew that if I took that approach to conceiving, that I would probably do my own head in. So I thought, okay, we'd actually just, he just proposed to me, Jules had proposed to me. And I thought, and we were planning a wedding in Greece, which was going to be in 18 months' time. So about a year off from the wedding, I went off the pill. I didn't anticipate like wanting to fall pregnant immediately, but my thought was, I'll go off the pill. I've been on it for so long. Let's get my body recalibrated so that on our wedding night, we could start trying. Like that was what was in my head. And we were playing it safe. I say that with talking marks, you know, in the lead up to my wedding night. So for all of those people listening, don't play it safe. So, you know, it's amazing that you don't necessarily need a whole year to recalibrate from the pill. For me, what happened was, as soon as I went off the pill, I unexpectedly fell pregnant.
Wow.
Which is a big moment. Yeah.
Did the wedding carry on?
So it carried on. So we'd actually, it's a funny story, but we'd just gotten back from going over to Greece. I got married in Greece on a Greek island, and we'd met my wedding planner, our wedding planner, and, you know, paid cash for a lot of things there because that's what you do in Greece. You pay cash so you don't have to pay their crazy tax. So paid the photographer, deposit, videographer, like locked it all in. See you next year. Get on the plane, went to Paris, you know, on the way home, smelling the French red wine, which I usually love. And I'm like, oh, my stomach, I can't bear it. Like, what is that? Like, I'm smelling the cheese going, oh, it just doesn't. And so at the time, Jules goes, should we just get a pregnancy test? I'm like, oh, I'm so not going to be pregnant, but okay, let's get one. I did the test. And the test had was written in French. Like the description was on the back. Was like, yeah, right. And I was in an Airbnb with no internet. And so I saw one hard line and then like a really faint second line. And I went, do you reckon the faint second line means you're all good? I reckon you have to be, if you're pregnant, it would have to be two hard lines, right? For everyone listening, it does not have to be two hard lines.
Yeah, that line just needs to be there. That second line just needs to be present.
I didn't realize. So Jules and I looking at each other and he's like, nah, I reckon you're fine. You're not pregnant. Yeah. I was like, sweet.
It's confusing anyway, let alone in
it
France.
Is, right? And no internet to kind of like double check things. And so anyway, I come back to Melbourne shortly after, see a GP thinking I'm perhaps deficient in something. And it turns out she maybe do a test and she goes, you're pregnant. And when she said you're pregnant, I'll never forget it. Like I literally got chills and then I burst into tears and I said, but I'm getting married in Greece. she's like, okay, but all right, but you're still pregnant. That doesn't change anything. And I was like, oh my gosh. And she's talking about my options to me and all of this. And I'm just like, everything in my mind, like the biggest, most organized person you've ever met is just like what's in my calendar? What's this going to mean? Like, can I, you know, and I was obviously, there was an element of elation and that took a bit of time as I initially, it was shock, but then eventually I went, look, I'm in a loving relationship. What a blessing. And I was able to still have the wedding in Greece and our little one at the time was I think about 6 months old or something like that with the way the timing ended up. So it was all fine, but yes, certainly a little bit less planned than we had predicted.
Oh, that is so good. So then I guess if it was a bit of a surprise, how did you feel about that from a career point of view? Were you one of those people that was like nervous to step away? Were you like, it is what it is, let's just do it? How are you feeling there?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I'm completely honest, I was more anxious about how I was going to navigate the wedding, like my career. I knew that. And I think it's because I'm in a little bit of a fortunate situation to some extent in that I work for a family business. So although, you know, I don't think I ever really took time off, but also I needed to be connected to emails and things like that. Like for me to go on every couple of days once I'd had a child, just to kind of filter through emails and file things away, like that kind of... that's peaceful to me. I know other people would sit there going, like, what do you mean? Take time off, but that I needed. So I think I knew that the work wasn't going anywhere. Yes, I would have to offload a few things and, you know, et cetera, but I would be able to manage it and still be close enough to it that I could make it work. So it wasn't a massive stress for me at the time.
I love that. Great mindset. So then how does pregnancy go for you alongside work? Did you feel sick? Were you feeling all right?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a little bit unexpected. I thought it would be quite a beautiful process. I should start by saying, actually, that none of my closest friends had ever been pregnant before. And I think that matters to some extent because when you have seen friends go through it, you're like, oh, okay. And they tell you what it's like and you get the real deal, you know, and so you know what to expect.
And just the different life stages. Like I look back at one of my best girlfriends in our sort of immediate group. And I think, gee, that must have been isolating for you. And I just didn't realize at the time.
Yes. You don't, do you? You're like, okay, that person's pregnant. They're kicking on. They're doing their thing. Yes.
Yeah. And you're excited for them and I'll be there for you, but I don't have any idea what you're going through.
Right. Yeah. So I felt... the word isolated really comes to mind. So when I'm at home feeling, you know, nauseous and I'm... go on Instagram and there are all my friends, you know, having a fabulous dinner that I'm not involved in. I just remember being like, oh, I've got a little bit of FOMO.
Oh, I know that feeling.
I've been there, you know, but I'm too sick to be there. And then anyway, I think what happened for me was probably the first 12 weeks were very precarious and I don't do well in the gray area. Like it's black or it's white. Don't give me halfway or could happen. Maybe don't get your hopes up, but looking pretty good, you know, all these sort of things. So the whole 12 weeks, I was like, okay, I'm going to try to forget I'm pregnant. I don't know. Like, I don't want to be disappointed if this doesn't eventuate. And then you hear all the stories of other people where it didn't eventuate and you're like, I'm not going to let that freak me out. And, you know, it's so precarious. And so
and there's not much tangible to it except for symptoms because you're not showing, you don't really feel the growth.
Yes.
You feel a little bits, but not much.
No.
So it's a weird, weird space to be in.
Isn't it? I wanted to have one of those, like, you know, what is it? The ultrasound scanners, like literally next to my bed. So I could just be like, check. Oh, yeah, we're all good.
You're
you know, don't you? Yeah, you're hanging for those hospital visits. You're hanging for anything that's going to give you a level of certainty that things are progressing in the way that they should be. So I struggled with that, with my type A control freak personality, alongside the anxiety that I've always had, you know, my whole life, alongside a lot of the inner talk, the critical shit, all the stuff that you're like, you bury, you know, because you're so busy, work hard, part, you know, play hard, all that, just keep going. And then all of a sudden you're pregnant and you have to stop and sit in your thoughts sometimes, and your body's
It's the first like act of surrender, like just stop.
Yes, which was a foreign concept to me at the time, you know, as well. So all of these feelings were coming up for me, and they all essentially manifested in what I didn't realize was prenatal depression. But I think by about my 20-week scan, speaking to my obstetrician, he was like, tell me what's really going on, because I can see you're glazed over, you're not even here, you know. And then Jules, my husband, actually said, look, she hasn't been well. And I remember going, oh, I've been fine, like whatever, because I've always been the type of person, you just kick on, don't complain, don't talk about your feelings, mate, no one can, just kick on. Again, having come from that background of, you know, parents who just like work hard, get shit done, do you're the lucky, right thing.
Like, this is a
you're
good
lucky. You know, exactly. Yeah. We're in the lucky country. Don't you be
that's
complaining.
Really interesting. Yeah. Like, look what we did to get you here.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that it was a problem until other people started voicing to me that it was obviously, and then they named it, that you've got prenatal depression. You have options now as far as medication, as far as talk therapy, you know, and other avenues you can go down to improve your situation.
And so what did happen from there? Did you do anything specifically before giving birth to help your mental health?
Yeah, so I was nervous, although my obstetrician said the medication is completely safe to take whilst being pregnant. He said, particularly given your history with anxiety, et cetera, he was kind of not urging me to take it, but said, look, that could be a very good, I guess, solution. I say that in talking marks. But for me, again, my control freak tendencies went, what if I take the medication and then, because I know a number of girlfriends who have been on antidepressants, they said it numbs the bad feelings, but it also can numb the good. Yeah. And I thought, well, what if I'm not the same person anymore? Like, oh, what does that look like? So I ended up opting for talk therapy. I went through a fantastic organization called the Gidget Foundation. To those listening, absolutely would urge you to reach out if you're feeling you might need support in that area too. They specialize, they've got therapists who specialize in the, you know, the pre and postnatal sort of phase of our lives. So I had weekly sessions with a therapist moving forward.
I've never heard of that foundation. I'll have to look it up. So how, I know you said you weren't sort of totally tapped out of work at any point. Was there a plan behind that in terms of leading up to the birth and how maternity leave would look, or did you purposely keep it quite loose?
I think we kept it quite loose. I definitely delegated. So I knew that, you know, if there was a task, for example, within the office space that I, you know, for example, with property development, we've got a number of properties that we in planning phases for, and we are looking to get to a point where we get our building permit, right? So those projects that I was responsible for, I was able to sort of delegate off to other people. Having said that, as I said, I'd like to always just have a sneaky peek at the emails just to see how they're progressing. So I was able to delegate, and I had sort of, you know, as you would, your handover sheets, and I'm extremely thorough. So like, you know, processes and things, just so that everyone knew what they had to do. However, I think, and also because we're a smaller organization, the good thing was, I think a number of people were already across a lot of the work. So I didn't feel as though, yeah, it was all up to me to hand this whole thing over to someone who had no idea what, you know, what it was about. So it was fluid given the nature of the organization.
And you say you're really thorough and organized. Did that correlate with how you prepared for birth and motherhood as well? Or did you feel a bit like, we'll just figure this thing out?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because for the first time in my life, I went with that we'll figure this thing out on the fly approach, which I never do. But I think because I was so overwhelmed by the feelings that I was feeling on a daily basis throughout the pregnancy, and then mixed in with a level of guilt that I should not be feeling these feelings. I should feel elated every day. I should look, think about all those other people who, you know, trying to conceive. How could you think that? Well, like, what is wrong with you, Leonie? Snap out of it. Like, all the stuff that I've told myself my entire life, you know, I'm berating myself whilst being like, but I don't know, like, you know, I can't help it. I can't snap out of this. I'm so frustrated. So I'm just going round in circles whilst putting on the happy face, whilst being out on construction sites with the boys, you know, just being like, all right, this is what we have to do today. Kick on. Don't tell other people that you're, you know, just feeling a little off. Don't go communicate. Just kick on. So there was just so much going on that I felt as though I was at max capacity with that, trying to then foresee what it could be like or what, you know, and pre-plan at what parenthood alongside all of these emotions that I was already feeling could be like. I just don't think I had capacity for. So I really just went, whatever, I'm just holding my shit together now and I'll just have to figure it out when the baby comes or when the birth happens. I did one birth course, but, you know, outside of that, no research, no parenting books, nothing.
That's a really interesting way to have it described to me because it makes a lot of sense, but no one's actually ever recalled that time in that way. And I totally understand that because it sort of like feels like this void of the unknown anyway. And you're like, what do I even do to prepare myself? You could prepare yourself forever and maybe that's a good thing, but it can be very overwhelming, as you say. When we talk about earlier, we talked about the identity crisis that you went through. Do you think a sense of not preparing was trying to remain your old self a bit in that corporate environment? I feel like sometimes I would play it down at work because I'm like, oh, no, I'm here to work. Like, let's not worry about mum me. Forget about her. She's a loser. Like, yes. I am career me. Did you have any of that?
I did in a big way. And even, so funny, I don't think I've ever actually made that that correlation either. But, yeah, certainly at work on construction sites, particularly because it's very male-dominated, like we were talking about how every now and then the project manager would be like, hey, you know, how are you feeling? Yeah, good. Anyway, let's kick on. Like, you know, it was never like, oh, well, I'm 23 weeks now. We're going, well, my baby's a peanut, you know, like tomorrow it's going to be an orange, you know. There was no chatter. It was just, you know, kick on. And I think you're right. I was holding on for dear life as well for that identity that I was so accustomed to. I remember even being at a restaurant and I was pregnant at the time. I never wore clingy clothes. I always wore flowy. And again, I wonder if there's like a subconscious thing in there.
Yeah.
I was at a restaurant in my flowy top and it was a group dinner and it was a restaurant I go to quite often. And at the end of the dinner, the owners brought out like little limoncello shots or something like that. And because I hadn't even told them I was pregnant, again, hanging on to my like cool factor, you know, old school Leonie, for, you know, pre-parent identity. So
yeah.
Anyway, so they bring the limoncello shots down and then one of my girlfriends turns to the owner and goes, oh, no, Leonie can't have one. She's pregnant. And at the time, I remember just being like, why'd you have to tell him for? Like, clearly I wasn't going to have
a
shot.
Anyway. Funny.
But like,
yeah.
I just want to be cool. Don't talk about me being pregnant.
Oh, that's so interesting. I can so relate to that feeling.
Can you?
Like, don't bring that up. Don't bring that up.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. Yeah. In some ways, I embraced it so much. But in other ways, it's like, no, shush. Don't bring that up.
Yes.
So then what does happen when baby does enter the world? Tell us about those early motherhood days.
Look, I think initial elation, and I hear that a lot, as you know, I've got a podcast as well in the parenting space. And so from a lot of stories of other people, they're always talking about that initial, like the family visit and it's all just happy day, you know, and everyone's loving life. And I remember I was completely high on life for probably a period of, if I'm honest, might even have been 3 to 4 weeks. Like it did carry through with all the visitors. This is more so the first time, the second time was COVID, but the first time I completely elated. But then that wears off and then it's, okay, the daily grind. And then it's hubby goes back to work within 3 days of me giving birth. And then, you know, I was fortunate that my parents were able to sub in for 3 months to really support, which is an absolute blessing. But, you know, and then they go on with their normal life as well. And you're kind of like, ooh, this is real life now. So I think that's when it was for me the postnatal. I didn't realize that it was even postnatal because I, instead of feeling glazed over and typical, you know, the symptoms that you would expect from someone who is depressed, and that's what I had in prenatal, like exactly what you would think, like, you know, low motivation but just kept trying to get through the day and things like that. With postnatal, I was just furious. Everything was ticking me off. I just couldn't. I was edgy. Don't come near me. Like, I just, everything's annoying. Like, I was good towards my child. And I think probably instinctively, maybe it's like human nature that, you know, it's not like I was angry at my child, but more just the environment around me. I was very prickly about. And essentially, when I saw my obstetrician for whatever checkup, it might have been the 12 week, at some point several weeks later, I mentioned, he's like, well, how are you feeling now? Because obviously having prenatal, you're very susceptible to having postnatal. That's just how these things work. And I said, no, I'm fine. I'm just really, I guess I'm really angry. And I don't think that has anything to do with anything. And I feel bad about that because why am I angry? I should be, again, I should be feeling X, Y, Z way, and I'm not. And so he essentially said to me, we've got to keep an eye on you because these are symptoms for postnatal depression. So again, for those people who are listening, who are like, oh yeah, but I'm not like depressed. I'm just like really angry. And it's not like you have an angry day and then like the next day you're fine and then the next day you might have an angry, like for me it was a common thread, like constantly
just simmering.
That's something to potentially look at.
So then how long did you formally take off work? How long were you at home before returning to the office?
It's a good question. For my first, he was born in November, and I think I was pretty much back, and construction sort of doesn't wind back up till probably late Jan. I reckon I was back by about Feb. When I say back though, online, you know, for several hours a day and actually starting to take on responsibility. So I would say probably 3 to 4 months.
Yeah. Wow. And how did that go in the early days for you? Were you sort of clinging for something else when you weren't feeling that great with your postnatal depression, or was it a juggling act? How did you feel about it?
I feel like it was to some extent soothing to me because it was my old identity. You know, I was like, oh, I'm good at that. Like over here with the baby and I don't know what I'm doing, you know, but I'm good at over here. I'm good at work. And so what I did was I got a nanny in and I had them look after Noah for a number of hours where I was able to work. But I guess what I went upon reflecting, I think there's something to be said about feeling like you need to juggle it all. So for me, I had the flexibility to be able to work the hours I needed to work. So what did I do? I didn't allow myself a full day to really get into work, have a break, get back to it, go for a walk. Like it was just like, oh my goodness, I'm paying this nanny, you know, whatever it is per hour. I have to make sure those 4 hours I work are the most intense hours of my life because I need to get every bit of value out of the fact that I'm paying this person. So I didn't do things like, I didn't look after myself. I didn't have her stay an extra hour and pay an extra $30. You know, you think about it, really, it's here nor there when it comes to your mental health. But in my mind, oh no, wouldn't have her look after my child so I can go and do a yoga class or so that I can look after myself. I have to make sure I'm working when she's here and then I've got the baby and then where's your reprieve? And I feel like that was probably one of my biggest challenges, trying to balance it all.
And so then you slowly but surely, I guess, return to work more and more. When does baby two come into the picture and how do you feel about this when you've experienced prenatal and postnatal depression? Does it change the way you're feeling about falling pregnant again?
I mean, I always wanted 2 children close together. I've got a 6-year gap between myself and my next sister and then my sister after that. My 2 younger sisters are only 18 months apart. And so I used to look at that and I was like, that's so cool. Like they had the same friends, like, you know, they were 1 year level apart in school. Like how cool is that? And so I was always of the mindset of my childhood mindset of like, that's cool. I want that. I didn't actually factor in the fact that that's actually quite challenging as a parent when they're so close in age. So we took a similar approach the second time around. I thought, okay, if I want a 2-year gap, let's start trying, I don't know, even 8 months before that so that, you know, because it might take longer. Like we don't know. I was fortunate. It took a little longer this time. It was probably, I don't know, several months, but I was fortunate to fall pregnant where it was going to be an 18-month gap between my two children. So that was, I felt actually quite optimistic and I was feeling pretty good because I was like, okay, all of the stresses that I had about not really knowing what children were like and feeling FOMO and all this stuff, they were non-existent now because a few of my friends had had children. I'd sort of gotten into the flow of parenthood. I'd been, you know, speaking to others about it. So I was feeling a bit more content. But this is where I think something to do with your biology must kick in, because although I was feeling quite content and quite elated when I found out I was pregnant, I started feeling over time as the pregnancy progressed, similar symptoms of just yuck, of just the negative chat of just, you know, just of like the anxiety increasing, like dialed right back up again. And I just wonder, like, you know, obviously maybe that's how I'm built in a way. Like there's got to be an element of that outside of just the experiences that you've had in life. And I just think some people are potentially more susceptible. So the good thing with round two was that I knew what I was looking for. And as soon as I noticed, oh, I'm not feeling motivated again. Oh God, here we go. I'm feeling like this heavy cloud is sitting on top of me. I was able to enact the things that worked for me the first time. So I went straight back into talk therapy. I had a label for it because I think a lot of the time when you're sitting in the gray area going, oh, is this normal? Maybe this is normal. I don't know. Like, you know, and yeah, so, but this time I was like, okay, I know this is not normal. Mm. And I know there are things I can do now to support myself. So I felt a little bit more empowered, a lot more empowered than I did the first time around.
For most of my first pregnancy, I really coasted through it. I felt a little bit shit here and there, but mostly I just worked as usual. Second pregnancy, my first trimester was like way worse, like so much worse in terms of symptoms around nausea and tiredness. My age gap will only be slightly bigger than yours, so we're at a similar postpartum phase. Did you feel that tiredness or?
I felt it and I was so angry that I felt it because I have this thing, again, it's just messed up inner child stuff, but that if I'm not productive, I am not loved, essentially. Like if we're going to go deep, like it's like you have to be productive, you have to succeed. It's because I guess to some extent growing up, I felt a level of a conditional love based on my outputs in the world. So based on my grades, you know, academically, or based on whether I won the race, or based on whether I got the lead in a play, you know, all of a sudden you get those things and there's so much affirmation. And then other times I felt guilty to bring up the fact that I didn't get an A+ or that I didn't get that role. And so I guess I was sort of built in that way. So now as an adult, even when I get sick with a cold, I can feel myself getting so frustrated that I can't be as productive as I normally could be. And that was a similar feeling I felt through pregnancy, which I think compounded my anxiety and all of those feelings, because I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many things I should be doing right now. Rest is just lazy. Rest, I don't have time for rest. And that's been my biggest hurdle because, you know, as you know, and particularly in parenthood and beyond, rest is everything. But if you're not programmed that way to appreciate that, it's really difficult to change your mindset around it.
And do you think that idea of surrendering has come with time? Because before we even started recording, I said to you that one of the biggest challenges for me has been like having to cancel on people if I'm feeling too unwell with pregnancy, or my son is sick and my husband can't get back from work quick enough for a certain interview time. How have you navigated that? Or has it been a slow process of surrendering?
Yeah, slow process of surrendering. And when I'm feeling uncomfortable with the fact that I have to surrender, or I have to your point, change something, or, you know, I journal, like I have to get it out on the page to kind of visibly go, oh, that's where it is. Yeah. I don't know. I just find that, yeah, if it's out on the page, I can kind of look at the situation objectively and I'm not just spinning wheels in my head.
That's a great idea. I'm also just thinking that would make me then think of it as not a part of me. Like, for example, if someone cancels on me, totally get it. Your kid's sick or you're sick or you're pregnant or whatever.
Yeah.
So if I saw it on the page, I'd probably forgive myself. I'm going to stop doing that. That's a brilliant tip. So then let's go back to your podcast. So you're in your second maternity leave, your second postpartum, and pretty early on you're having these thoughts that I want to start having these conversations. How did you actually get it off the ground? You're working, I'm sure, a little bit as well. You're mothering two kids now, not one. How does that all come together?
So my sister was massively influential in all of this. So she's got a podcast production agency, and she had also done a short course, online course that essentially I ended up doing. So she created the course, and it's sort of like a go to woe around what you need to know and think about and do to get a podcast off the ground. So what am I doing? I'm listening to module one at 2:40 in the morning because I can't sleep and I'm so excited about doing this podcast. And I'm just like, you know, and that really helped me. So it was sort of a step-by-step, you know, from idea inception all the way through to how do you release an episode and, you know, things to consider. So I had her program, but also her to bounce ideas off. How did I fit it in? I think, you know, I find being mentally stimulated, as I said, to some extent comforting. So whilst I had toddler running around and I had baby on my arm, you know, like, and I'm sort of, you know, checked my emails for 10 minutes, I'm feeling pretty good about that. It was just another thing for me to feel like I could do. And I'd tap in and I'd tap out of it. I eventually was able to, I remember I smashed her course out in like 4 days. And it's like a, I don't know, 3-week thing, but you're meant to just do bite-sized chunks. But, you know, that didn't fly for me. So I was really interested too. So I was like, this is amazing. So I came out of that going, great, I'm ready. Who do I interview? And so initially I called the podcast Mum Life. And it was Mum Life for about 5 episodes because I was like, I'm a mum. I want to speak to other mums about their experiences. But give me the real, the deep stuff. Give me, you know, how do you really feel about your partner? How do you, you know, like if you come in on the pod, give me the real shit, right? So I did that and that was great. But then I started realizing as I was hearing people's stories, I was like, okay, so you felt really resentful when your husband was able to walk out the door and tap in and tap out of family life and you were chained to this baby that you love so dearly, but also you wouldn't mind having that reprieve as well. Great. What does your partner think about that? Like I started going, I feel like I'm getting 50% of the story here because how does he feel or she feel as they walk out of the door? So I then pivoted and I went, okay, I'm going to call it parenthood and I'm going to bring couples on and single parents to talk about their most challenging experiences as parents. And then, so I did that and I loved that. So I got the opportunity to hear from the partner about how they felt as though when they walked out the door, they were going to miss something. And the fact that they knew that when they were going to come home typically to a tired, resentful partner who's like, I've been with the baby all day. Like everything's annoying me. Take the baby. And they'd worked a whole day of work. So they're holding the baby. They knew they probably weren't going to sleep at night either. And it's just a mix of emotions, right? But I loved that. I loved hearing holistically what was going on. And so then that progressed and I've got over 100 episodes now, but over time I started getting audience members to call in and provide us with confessions around what was keeping them up at night. So both dads and mums, and I was very vigilant about ensuring that I had sort of a 50-50 split. So although we didn't have nearly as many dads call in, I would always use the dad one because that was sort of our point of difference. And so, for example, we've had people call in, you know, a dad call in saying, look, I haven't had sex with my wife in 5 years. She shows me very little affection since the baby's come along. I don't know what to do. And I don't know if my relationship's over or if there's an opportunity for me to communicate in a way that can kind of start airing out this situation that we're in, you know, some like really sort of heavy stuff. Or a mum saying, my partner always undermines my parenting. I'm just over it. I don't know what to do
now.
Or, you know, someone else. So sort of, and then I would bring on guests to come on to sort of, and would hash out that sort of topic. So yeah, it's really evolved into a little bit of a community now. But what I love about it is that I'm able to sort of get the two sides of the coin when it comes to the parenting experience.
Wow, that's fascinating. What you may have just told me, those examples might be exactly it, but what are the most common conundrums keeping a man or a dad versus a mother up at night?
So certainly the resentmentville piece around you get to leave and I have to stay, even though, again, I think goes without saying, we love our children, but it's such a complex, I think, dynamic, particularly.
They're very separate experiences, aren't they?
Totally.
The love versus the doing of, like the act of caregiving all the time. They're very different things.
Very different things. That's a huge one. The physical touch piece is a huge one. So often birth mother feeling completely tapped out. You know, think about it. Before you had children, who did you give all your physical touch to? Your partner. Then you have a child hanging off you. Your body's changed. You've got milk coming out of everywhere. You know, you've got like so much touch that the last thing you feel like doing is to touch someone else and reach out and show that affection. So really it's such a complex thing of where, you know, the partner, same sex or otherwise, would say to me, yeah, but the thing is I wasn't the birth mum and I felt, I mean, I had a dad come on who said, I just felt she didn't love me anymore. Like I just, you know, she wouldn't even pat me on the back when I'd walk past her in the kitchen. There was nothing. And for a whole year, there was nothing. And we'd gone from, you know, the sexy land phase of, you know, being together as a couple without children and it's all fun and, you know, to, oh my goodness, like if I breathe in her direction, she's going to crack it at me. Like I couldn't put a foot right. And he said, my biggest thing is that with affection, that's a way, it's like, that's my love language, right? Essentially, is like when I'm not getting that, I'm feeling resentful, but I'm trying not to show it and all of the things. So that is a huge piece, the physical touch piece.
What have been the biggest lessons or reflections that you've learned from over 100 episodes?
Of all of those episodes, and I'm smiling because we often feel as though our experiences are so, you know, unique and individual and no one else is feeling that way. But then, you know, you speak to a girlfriend and the girlfriend might resonate with you and you're like, cool, that's two people who are experiencing this. After 100 plus episodes, what I'm realizing is there's probably five key themes that we all experience. You know, you're not special. Don't feel bad about it. Don't tear your hair out about it. Like we're all experiencing it. And that's what I love about sort of sharing stories and solutions as well, you know, around how we can tackle some of these things. So, as I said, the sort of the physical touch, one of them, which I think is pretty funny, I'd love to get your opinion on this one, but it's like the tit for tat. So like, well, hold on, I woke up 3 times for the baby last night. So like you should technically do breakfast for them because I'm just exhausted. No, well, hold on. You went out with the girls last night and I've been out with the boys for like 2 weeks or, you know, and like the tit for tat, like point scoring, like who wins?
100%. Oh, I do it for sure.
Don't you?
For sure.
But yeah.
Always. And like I've always got pregnancy to rely on. Like, yes. Hey, babe, I've been pregnant for 18 months all up, like for these babies. So bring whatever ammo you want back to me.
Yes.
I've got that over you forever.
I win.
And
I
who's
win.
Giving birth? It's me. Yes. It's not you. And who's breastfeeding and all of that. So, oh, I try not to. And I think we're 18 months into this journey now. I think I'm getting better at appreciating his side because he really does give his all and he does a lot of the thinking now too, which I really like.
Yeah.
So I try not to be like that, but you can't help it, especially when you are at home on those days alone with your kid because everything's just ruminating in your head. You're not having adult conversations with anyone. You're chatting to a baby potentially. If they're unwell, you're stuck inside together all day. You don't go to the park with your mates. You're just sitting there.
Yeah, right. And these common behaviors can come up. I was shocked by that the first time. I'd heard it once on the tit for tat with one couple and then someone else mentioned it again. Do you know what he always does? Do you know what she always does? Bloody, you know, point scoring. And then I'm hearing it repetitively and I'm like, oh my God, okay, this is good. This is making me feel so much better
so
about
much
my
better.
Relationship.
And the touched out thing, you've made me feel better about that too. I'm quite lucky that, I mean, my husband's affectionate, but his love language is not, like, he's not a wildly affectionate, wildly sort of driven by touch person, which I have to admit, I felt really lucky in my postpartum because if we'll hug and whatnot, but if I want to go to bed at night and just sort of sit there with a bit of a gap between us, he's okay with that.
Yes.
Because the touched out thing, I just didn't think that would be me. I was like, as if, I'll be fine. I need my space now that I'm pregnant again. Like basically it was postpartum until it was pregnant again. And now I'm like, I need my space. So I'm glad to hear that that's a common one.
I often hear about like women. I don't know anyone, but I've seen this on like TV shows and stuff where they get really horny when they're pregnant. I'm like,
oh, I wish that was me.
That's just not me at all.
Not me at all. And I went 4 weeks early with my son and the
midwife last time
said, penetration's not great as well for preterm labor. And I was like, oh God, just what Hayden needed, like extra ammo to stop me from having sex. Poor guy. It's not looking good. It's not looking good for the next probably year. Yeah.
But know that that is so normal. And we always, you know, we can often feel a level of guilt or shame or, you know, and I guess my biggest tip to those listening sort of who might be sitting in this and going, yeah, like, okay, I probably could be more affectionate towards my partner. And yeah, we may have had sex like once in the last 3 months. And I do feel a little bit guilty about that, but also like, I've got shit to do. I don't, you know, like I've got to look after me, whatever, you know, and I've been there. That's why I say it. And I hear it all the time. I would say the biggest tip as far as just trying to ensure that your relationship doesn't feel too much of the burn of that, essentially, is to sometimes have those awkward conversations and voice it. So maybe it's at a time where you're pushing bubs in the pram. You've got 5 minutes to talk because let's be real, you got to find your time, because when you're trying to say something that's like a bit more deep and meaningful, you got a toddler screaming at you and a baby needing a feed. That is not the time, as we all know. So these times can be few and far between. But when you do find the nugget of time to sort of just communicate and say, babe, you know, maybe it's even a touch on the shoulder, you know, babe, just look, I'm aware that obviously I've been a little bit touched out recently. You know, I am aware of it. I just, at the moment with the bubs and stuff, it's just been a little bit hard, but I appreciate you being patient with me. And, you know, hope, you know, with time, I'm sure that, you know, we'll get back to our usual selves. I know that this is a bit of a phase, and look, I just appreciate you and I love you. Like, it can be as simple as that. I mean, there's so many versions of that, but sometimes, because I mentioned that in the episode that I did with the couple where the husband said, I just felt she didn't love me. And the reaction of his wife at the time was she started crying, and she was like, but you should have said something.
Oh, you'd be heartbroken.
She's like, you should have said something. Like, I never want you to feel like I don't love you. And I said, well, would it have been, like, if we'd use that example and you'd had the opportunity to sort of, I said to Peter, the guy, I was like, maybe even had you brought it up and said, babe, is everything okay with us? I'm just mindful that, you know, I know that you've got a lot going on with the baby, but, you know, just making sure that we're all sweet. I'm like, did it ever occur to you to have that conversation? He said, well, no, because it's a hard conversation to have. But she goes, had you had that little conversation, I would have sort of been able to come out of what I was in and kind of look at you and go, oh, wow, like, hi there, human that I love so dearly, but I don't have a lot of time for right now. Yes, let's just, you know, recalibrate to some extent. And yeah, it doesn't mean that next minute you're jumping in bed together, but it can sometimes just be acknowledging your situation as a couple, which is easier said than done. That can help as well.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because Celeste, who's a friend of mine who has a podcast called St. Magella and who runs a business called St. Magella, they recently did the Mother of All Fairs, which was this incredible sort of motherhood event in Rosebud on the Mornington Peninsula. She is a midwife and a yoga teacher. So she takes these really awesome prenatal yoga programs and has a lot of sort of midwifery background to it.
Yeah.
And the conversation or the topic one night was around intimacy. And she sort of pulled intimacy out of sex and was like, you can have intimate moments with your partner without it being about sex. And it really sort of stopped me in my tracks, because I'd realized that sometimes Hayden would walk in the door and I wouldn't even look up or acknowledge him. And yes, maybe I had a really hard day and I feel frustrated that he doesn't understand what it is that the primary caregiver goes through. But if I'm thinking about him, that would feel terrible, like the person that you love not even looking up at you. So even just have those moments of having a little conversation, acknowledging how you're feeling, or just giving them a hug in the kitchen, I reckon it's made the world of difference for how I feel, because I was just feeling guilty the whole time.
Yes.
I was giving him nothing, essentially.
Yes, I love a kitchen cuddle. Like, but the thing is as well, it's not something that feels organic. Like, I don't know, a lot of the time it doesn't feel like, oh yeah, that's what I'm going to go and do. But if you've got it in your head, and to your point, you don't necessarily have to have the chat if that doesn't feel right to you, but perhaps as of this moment, you're like, okay, when I see my partner again tonight, I'm just going to give, like, snuggle in for, you know, that little extra second that I usually would, or, you know, whatever it looks like. You're starting to at least lead with a little bit of affection, and those are intimate moments in themselves. So it's a good way to sort of even break the ice if you're feeling like you've been roommates for some time.
Yeah, because sometimes you can feel like colleagues.
Totally, yes.
So there's this idea that you mentioned as something that you've thought about in the past, or that maybe is a topic of interest of you, that idea of, like, can women have it all? I'm probably more of the, I don't know if you ever saw that famous Michelle Obama line where she swears on stage and says that it's bullshit and that women, they can have it all, but not all at the same time, which is probably honestly where I sit. You can create your own version of all, and you can have moments where career takes the front seat and then motherhood takes the front seat. But I don't love this idea of us trying to have it all at once. Where do you sit on that?
I agree with you. And I just think there are only so many hours in the day. And if you're trying to do something well, it takes more than a bite-sized amount of time. I mean, you know, for example, doing a podcast. Now, most people would be like, yeah, you just hit record and have a conversation, don't you? Like, it's like, no, sweets, there's a lot that goes on.
There's so much
to get these episodes out there, and social media and guests and da, da, da. Like, there's so much, and sponsors, if that's the way you want to go. So, you know, it becomes its own little beast in itself. Now, if you give that, I don't know, 1/10 of your time daily, it's going to be very difficult to get that off the ground and do it well. So I agree with you. I think, you know, there were certainly times in my journey where work was everything, particularly pre-children. And then, you know, for a period of time, the first 6 months or 8 months of my children's life, I felt like I was doing everything half-heartedly. Like I'm at work, but I'm like half there. And, you know, then the kids need me. And then I feel guilty that the nanny's been here for an extra hour. And I didn't, you know, you're just kind of all over the place. And I always
have that person. Number one thing, sorry to butt in,
yes.
That is the number one thing that has been said on this podcast, is that people feel like they're half-assing everything.
Yes. Can't barely get back to your friend. You're half writing a text message and you forget you haven't even sent it.
You've got one tab open, then you go to something else. You're like, just finish the thing you're doing.
You lose your car keys. Like, it's just a shit show. Like, the whole first year it's just survival. And so I would say then that that's probably, that, you know, family's leading the charge on that, because that's sort of having an impact on everything, sleep deprivation, et cetera. And you're sort of semi doing your job, but then, you know, you come out of that and something else will take the lead. So I do agree with you. I think that there's definitely, it just swings in roundabouts, and not to feel bad about that as well. I think a lot of the time I'm very impatient to achieve, I guess, whatever you would call deem as success. You know, success for me is freedom, really, and I guess financial security too. But, you know, I'm in such a rush to be free so I can travel whenever I want and do whatever I want and all the things. But it's like, you know, slow down, and, you know, things are going to swing in roundabouts, and you need to sort of be okay with moving with the tide.
Yours and my personalities are very similar.
Are they?
Totally resonate with that. I could chat to you for ages, but I will let you go. So one last question for you. You're now a little bit further on in your motherhood journey. What would be your greatest piece of advice for someone that's maybe on the precipice of becoming a mother, that feels a bit nervous for how their career and motherhood journeys will sync up and how it will all work?
Yeah, wow, that's a big question. So don't try to, I mean, I almost need to, I would say this to my younger self as well. You can't obviously control how things are going to pan out. So I feel as though you can certainly, you know, do the required planning, put the things in place, but just know that, I mean, this is from a work perspective, plan for your maternity leave if that's what you're going to take, delegate accordingly, and put the structures in place, but know fundamentally that you will not be able to control the outcomes necessarily, and certainly on the motherhood front and the pregnancy and the birth front and all everything in between, you can't control nothing. So
yes,
do plan for what you can, and then almost surrender, which is a word that I love, as you know, but as surrender as much as possible, knowing that it will all work out, but it may not look exactly how you plan for it. And I think that's the beauty in not trying to forward think too far ahead, because you just don't want to be disappointed if it doesn't sort of pan out exactly how you'd pictured it.
That's a really great sentiment and piece of advice to end on. Leonie, if people want to find your podcast, where should they go?
Yeah, so we're on all the major podcasting apps. We're called Parenthood, and also on Instagram, we're at Parenthood Pod.
Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.